Now, those of you who have heard me talk through the years, I'm really a parables. I'm parables. I tell stories. I don't do it deliberately. It just happens. And my favorite story about the centering prayer is when I was growing up as a young boy in Newark, New Jersey. My parents owned a four-family house. I mean, four apartments, two levels. We were the landlord. So we had the apartment with five rooms. Everybody else had the apartment with four rooms. And this day and age, it's hard to believe five people can live in five little rooms. But we did. Now, my mother, I'm of Italian ancestry, the best of Italians, because we're 100% Sicilian. And so I'm an island person like you are. And so what happened actually is, but I do not belong to the mafia. I only pray for them. But every Tuesday and Thursday, my mother would make the Italian spaghetti sauce. And she would start cooking, you know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. With the olive oil and the garlic and sautéed onions and then the tomatoes and then halfway through the tomato paste. Now you get, at home we get like Paul Newman, you know, mix. You don't do all that. But an aroma would fill the apartments of the other people, whether they liked it or not, they had the aroma. Now, downstairs was a wonderful young couple. I used to babysit for their children. But Selma did not cook. That wasn't her specialty. And Jules would come back from work every night. And on Tuesday and Thursday, as he went in the back door of the stairs, you know, he would get this aroma, you know, and would hope that when he went into his apartment, it was coming from his apartment. So one day Selma decided to come and ask my mother, you know, how you do what you do. And she explained it all to her. So the next night she cooked it. So the following night, my mother saw her and said, "Selma, how did it go?" She said, "Not too good, Mrs. Errico, not too good, not too good. I got the olive oil. I got the garlic, sautéed it along with the onions. Then, you know, tomatoes are tomatoes, so I got the ketchup." Many people tell me they're doing centering prayer, but they're not. They're really not. And that's okay. God's pleased with whatever we're doing. I'm not saying that. But if you're going to do the prayer, do the prayer. Follow the recipe, because it has a specific purpose. So, in light of that, all I'd like to invite you to do, because we'll have time with those that need a refresher, is to learn it for the first time, please, once again, read the recipe. And one of the most important parts of the recipe is the fact centering prayer is the heart and soul of centering prayer is consenting. That's it. If you start looking for anything else, you're manipulating the lover. The whole question is, you want to consent and allow the lover to have the lover's way with you. Because most of our spiritual journey is trying to control our God. And when we can't, we get upset. So in all your other prayers, you can control all you want. But when you sit on a centering prayer, you're allowing God to bathe your feet. The beautiful image of that that came out of Holy Week. And as you know, Peter said, "Not only my feet, but my hands and my head." So allow God to bathe your feet on God's terms. So the heart and soul of centering prayer is consenting, not only to God's presence, but to God's action. And the marital covenant promise is so powerful in this. Some of you heard me talk about it these last few days if you attended our little gatherings in the city. Lord, I take you for better or for worse, richer or poor, in sickness and in health, into eternity. When we sit in centering prayer, we're renewing that. And the beautiful part of it in our Christian tradition is the fact we truly believe that God is saying to us, by name, I take you, for better or for worse, richer or poor, in sickness and in health, into eternity. That makes sense? Keep that in mind. So it doesn't matter what happens during the prayer. You get itches, something's being released. If you feel that you've just gone to the seventh mansion of Teresa of Avila, fine. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that you're consenting and giving yourself over entirely. As that old romantic song that Tony Bennett used to sing when I was a kid, all of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you? You took the part that once was my heart, so why not take all of me? That's what we do for that 20 minutes or so. And so the guidelines really come out of, as you know, that wonderful passage from Matthew 6:6. When you pray, go to your inner room, close the door, pray to your Father in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will cause your life to, I don't like the word reward, you will cause your life to blossom, because it's an ongoing relationship. So we have the intention to pray when we enter into centering prayer. We go to our inner room, which is our heart, because God doesn't want our head. The purpose of our head is to be a compass to point us in the right direction. Then we have to start the journey, and the journey is a journey of the heart. But so many people, many times, not a judgment, an observation, spend all their time looking at the compass, but never starting to take the trip. And so, in this journey of ours, if you want to pray, go to your inner room, close the door, which means let go of all the stuff you're always worrying about. Put it aside. Don't get rid of it. Don't destroy it. It's part of your journey, but at this particular time, detach from it. You're holding on too much. And a sign that you're stuck as the old man, as the scriptures tell us, is when we cling to something so much that we're determined that it's going to work even if it kills us. And what does it do? Kills us. And instead of growing up and aging sweetly, we end up turning to vinegar as we get older because we can't let go. And even though a person may go to a retreat house over and over again, it's possible that somebody changes dramatically, and it's possible no change takes place. Because as Merton says, if you cling to something, you fill yourself with a lot of activity, but no movement. A lot of activity, but no inner movement at all. So when you pray, you go to your inner room, close the door, pray to your Father in secret. And that's just with a simple word. And in centering prayer, your little sacred word is a symbol of your desire to consent. And your Father who hears in secret, because he already reads our hearts, knows what we want. No, knows what we need. And will always give it to us. Big distinction. So that our life might blossom. So the four little simple guidelines. We choose a sacred word as a sign and symbol of our consenting to God's presence and action in our life. We sit comfortably, back straight, and we allow ourselves to present ourselves really to our God, saying, do whatever you need to do from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. Because, as many of you know, the issues are in the tissues. We store so much in our bodies that unless we can let them go and allow the divine healer to release us, our bodies will always fight us or remind us of the patterns that we want to let go of. And unless we learn to let even those feelings go, then in a certain sense we get trapped in the same behavior over and over and over again. And addictions are a true sign, really, of the false self in action. And so on this journey of ours, the third guideline is the let go, let God guideline. Whenever you become engaged, not aware, engaged with a thought, commentary, vision, feeling, sound, when you start clinging to it, ever so gently return to your sacred word, let it come, let it go. And at the end of the prayer time, we don't leap right up into action. We sit for a few moments to allow the reservoir of silence to build up, so that when we do leave, we can explode like a geyser with God's love. We went to the geysers today, and I had a wonderful guide, Zigga. And Zigga said to me, watch now. The water starts to go down. The water starts to go up. It's building up momentum and what have you. And then lo and behold, boom, it came out. Just like us. And so we don't want to be like a little stream or a little puff of smoke. We want to make a presence in this world where, in a certain sense, our love sometimes explodes beyond our imaginings, because in a certain sense we're in touch with the power of the Holy Spirit that's down deep inside of us. So I invite you to take a look, you know, read it over. Don't presume you remembered everything. There's always a little nuance, you know, a ship leaving the port, if they change a slight degree on their compass, they could end up in an entirely different place because of that slight little change that may take place in someone. And one of my favorite stories is the fact that if you don't think there's anything to be worked on in your life, I will stay an extra day and we will visit with your family. And then we'll find out exactly what needs to be worked on in our life. Because our family knows us. As a priest, my congregation knows what needs to be healed in me. And I hate to hear it when they bring it to my attention. But they're right. They're absolutely right. I could never stand their guts. Oh, no, I would not. I was having a little difficult time dealing with special souls. So we invite you to look through it and let us be lighthearted on this retreat. In the silence, of course. The reason we're in silence is to listen to what's going on inside of us. Not to notice anything outside of us. And if you notice too much outside of you, how does that scripture passage go? What does it profit a person to go on a retreat and know everybody else but not know themselves? What does it profit a person to notice everything about everybody else and not notice what's going on inside of them? So it's a wonderful, wonderful inner journey that takes place. And the theme of the retreat is how Lectio Divina dances with centering prayer. And it's a wonderful dance that goes on between the two of them that we'll start to explore tomorrow. No, not while you're praying. There is no indication during the prayer time. We're following the teachings of John of the Cross, who says don't look for anything within your prayer. But you'll know that the prayer is working as your life begins to change outside of the prayer time. So in the centering prayer, you make no judgments as to how the prayer is going. This was a good session, this was a bad session, what have you. what happens if you do that. Then you sit down in the prayer and you're really not totally present. There's part of you that's taking notes. So you're not really present to what's there. So if after the prayer time, you right away open a book and you start writing, then in a certain sense, that always worries me, because what are you writing about? What you experience in the prayer? And if you're writing about what you experience in the prayer, then you weren't totally present to the prayer. You were gathering material so that you had something to write about. So how do you know the prayer is working? By the changes that may take place in your life. And in those changes that take place in your life, many of the people give witness to a number of things, but primarily a desire for greater simplicity in one's life, a greater comfort with solitude, a letting go of an uncomfortable feeling about entering into silence, the ability to feel in solidarity with the rest of the world, and you no longer see yourself as separate, and you would never say ever again, those people, because we're all one, no matter what. And Jesus died for everybody. Or you find that in your desire to have service, in your service, you don't look to be successful. You look to be faithful. And in the faithfulness of what you're doing, as Mother Teresa said so beautifully, your life will be fruitful. And your work will be fruitful. Beyond your efforts, you'll be surprised at what's happening beyond your efforts. And then all of a sudden you can begin to say, yes, my life is a success. So, you know, I just went through, you know, a 50-minute talk. But those are little signs that you begin to notice. And the interesting thing about it is other people notice it first. And they bring it to your attention. Because something's changing inside of you. Whereas if you stay on what the tradition calls the cataphatic way, I shouldn't even mention that word, forget it. Members of the jury, disregard that last comment. All right. Then when someone says they see a difference in you, you'll say, human nature will say, well, I've been working on it. And that's why there's a change. I've been working on it. Well, you're still leading the dance. And we want God to lead the dance. The consent is never good, because always consent is a little tainted. Because there's a little ego. Like a husband, a person getting married. Yeah. I take you for better, for worse, richer, or poor. However, in the area of handling the finances, I'm going to make sure I do it, and you're not going to stick your nose into that. Something like that. Okay. You know, I take you for better or for worse, but, you know, I'm not going to be too pleased if you're going to centering prayer movements when I want you home. What do you mean you're going on a Lectio retreat, taking time off? You're getting too spiritual. What about me? I want adoration. Well, change always takes place. It's just that many times people just look at the ordinary events of their life and are looking for change on the surface and not noticing some of the changes that are taking place inside, because they never pause to reflect as to what's going on inside. For instance, somebody would say to me, you know, I've been hoping to be less angry in my life, because it seems I always find myself angry, all right? And I'll say to them, you notice no change? No, I'm always feeling angry. I said, do you hold on to that anger as much now as you used to? Well, no, I let it go. And I go, you know, if, say, you're 45 years old and it's taken you this long to become the mess that you are, that I am, don't expect the change to take place in 45 minutes, because God is a very gentle God. But there's little nuances, the little changes that take when I say mess, it's the human condition. We all are part of it. And if anyone here thinks they're perfect, I ask you please to leave, because what you're doing is you're sapping the strength of the group, you know, by blocking the flow of the Spirit working through you. But it's these gradual changes. Now, if you're expecting to get your way because you pray, you're in big trouble. You are in big trouble. You don't manipulate the lover. And I always kid people in the United States, I think God is Italian. So when you try to manipulate God, God goes... I'm being very serious, but humorous. What makes you think you awake are more pleasing to God? See the judgment? So if let me put it this way. I love to tell the story about my little niece, Bonnie, who every time I would visit my sister's home, I won't go through the whole story, and there'd be a point that she would fall asleep in my arms. She was like 4 or 5 years old. And that little head would come on my chest, and I would look down at this child who surrendered to me and trusted me enough to sleep in my arms. She came into my arms. I didn't ask her to come there. And in her coming there, she felt comfortable enough to sleep. And when she woke up, she continued the conversation. Same thing with God. You came into God's arms. So if you fall asleep, you know, you fall asleep. And there is something very precious, I leave this to your experience, when your beloved or someone in your life that is very meaningful to you can cuddle up and fall asleep in your arms. That's a wonderful experience of intimacy. Now, don't start praying underneath the covers, you know, with all your... Although some people pray very well in bed because their back hurts. You know, their back hurts, and rather than make an excuse for not praying, they pray much better laying out flat, you know, and it gives them comfort.